Last month, I gave part one of a message on healing of our identity. And so what I want to do is pick up where we left off and go deeper into it, because this is such a bigger topic that we want to get into. And just so you know, we're talking about some deeper things here because of the series and what it's about. And so if stuff stirs up or stuff comes up, that's a good thing. It really is a good thing. It means that God's, you know, wants to bring healing into your life. And so we'll have an opportunity to pray through some of those things during the healing service afterwards today. And we can do that, set up other times as well. So let me do a little bit of a review, just to touch base so we can be a refresher of where we were last month and then where we're going to go. Last month we talked about two terms, the true self and false self. And the true self is like the core of who you really are, not what people tell you you should be or how other people might define you. It's the real you underneath all of the other stuff. So we went into that in a lot more detail. The false self is, well, I'll say this, if our true self becomes damaged in some way, then we might create a false identity called a false self. And the false self is like a protective identity. It's a mask. It's something that we might feel like is very real, but that we create around ourselves to hide the insecure and damaged part of us and to cover up feelings like shame and abandonment, rejection, feeling unworthy. And it protects us from those feelings. And then it keeps others around us from seeing those feelings inside. So emotions that might characterize a person's life in a false identity would be like feeling stressed all the time, not just in moments in life, but all these are like they characterize your life, feeling stressed, feeling rushed, feeling distracted, feeling hassled, feeling unfocused, anxious, guilty, confused, superficial, frustrated, angry, numb, depressed, apathetic, empty, insecure, those kinds of things. Now, of course, we don't live in one category or the other. You know, we go back and forth here. But these terms I'm using to help us to understand and to parse these things. So what happens is the false self covers the emptiness we feel inside when we don't know who we are. And probably the most important thing that we talked about last time was that we don't know who we are when we don't know whose we are. And our true self is more than how we identify. It's more than how you feel like you are. It's underneath that. It's underneath the hurts. It's underneath the rejections. Underneath your successes and failures. Other emotions. It's underneath the world that you've created around yourself. It's the deepest part of you. So to get a glimpse into our true selves, we looked into this passage in John 13:3. Where Yeshua, John says this about Yeshua, that he came from God, that he was returning to God, and that the Father had put all things under his power. And we went into that in more detail, but just ask yourself these three questions to begin here. Do you know that you came from God? Do you know that you're returning to God? Do you know that the Father has put all things in your life under his power? And so if you know all these three things, then you know your identity in Messiah. And when we live out of these things, then we're living out of our true self. So last month, we talked about how when we're not filled with the love of our Heavenly Abba, we find ourselves filled with shame. And that shame distorts our image of who we really are. And then we might draw our identity from that broken image of ourselves, and we begin to live out of a false identity. So this week, I want to get into some of the characteristics of a true and false self, and then talk about how the people and the experiences in our lives can damage our true self, and get into the healing a little bit. And what happens is that even though we might believe these three points, and we might trust God in them, we might be robbed of living out of a sense of his love, and robbed of living out a sense of belonging and safety and his joy and his peace because of the things that have happened to us. And the healing is what we're going to be talking about today. So I want to get into the characteristics. How do you identify a true and false self first? And then we'll get into some stories and things like that. Again, most of us don't live in one or the other. It's much more nuanced. So I want you to get that out there. I'm breaking this into big categories to help us understand. But so often in the prayer room, we find that these things get so buried that we only feel them when we're quiet or when the wrong buttons are pressed or when we come against loss or grief in our lives, when we lose control. But even without knowing it, we might live out of these things. And so this can help us to parse it for healing. That's the whole purpose. So, first thing we talked about is created by God in love. So, if you're living out of your true self, you know that you are a gift from God. A child of God. And if we're in our true self, then we draw our identity by the knowledge that we're created in love, rather than basing our identity on externals in our lives. So whether those externals be performance-based, if I do something perfectly well, then I'll be accepted and approved of. The true self cannot be worked for or earned because it's already there. It doesn't come from justifying ourselves or by our accomplishments. It comes from an intimate relationship with our Creator. And so often what happens is we end up drawing our identity from things, from performance at work, from the car I drive, you know, from how much stuff I can buy, how pretty my girlfriend is, my clothes, my friends, my looks, my jewelry, how many likes I get on Facebook. And what happens is that these externals, they end up feeling like a pressure cooker. Have you experienced that before? It's like a pressure cooker. And it's exhausting. And the only way to let out steam sometimes is through addictions and compulsions. And so we see food, sex, porn, alcohol, work, again, Facebook, social media, smartphones, whatever we can go to make us feel better and help us to escape the world that we've created around us. And that's really the root of addiction. It's also difficult for people who are living out of a false self to truly love, to freely love. They may have a voice of shame inside that says, no one could ever love me. I'll never make a good wife. I'll never make a good husband. I'll never be a good dad. I don't have what it takes. These are things that might, tapes that may play. And even though you might be desperate, have a desperate desire to be loved more than anything, they can't allow themselves to be because inside they believe that they're unlovable. See? So if you imagine that we all have a love tank, you know that idea? Inside of us, it's like they have a love tank with a big hole in the bottom of it. And so the freedom to love comes from knowing the love of your Creator. And that's really it. And loving with His love. And so if this is you, you need to internalize these verses. Like, in my mother's womb, you conceived me. I know that I'm fearfully and wonderfully made. You called me by name before the foundations of the earth were laid. Those sorts of things. Second characteristic of living out of a true self is having a deep trust in God, knowing that God has put everything under His power. So I've struggled with anxiety. I know what anxiety attack feels like when there are deadlines to meet, you know, when there are people to not disappoint and all the pressures of the world seem to overtake you and you get stuck and you can't breathe, you know. And for me in my life, that is a course of heartburn, things like that. But anxiety comes from not fully knowing God. Not fully knowing that He has put everything under His power. What I mean is not knowing Him, who He is. And it stems from being unsure about the future. From being afraid of what other people will think. From being afraid of rejection and disapproval from others. That's the root of anxiety, right there. And this is also the root behind why people can become controlling sometimes. It's a way of protecting that false self. Someone might feel tremendous anxiety when they're out of control because their false self is being stripped away. And a controlling person might be highly critical of other people's failings in order to cover up their own insecurities. And they might feel the need to lie about little things in their life, you know, or exaggerate everything, you know, that sort of thing. It's because this person lives in fear of judgment or rejection from other people and craves the praise of others. And that's what the source of their identity, craving the praise of others. So of course these things happen. Or they might feel the need to change people, to convince people of their opinions, to change your spouse, you know. I've heard someone say, stop nagging the person and start nagging God. you know. And Raina's really good at this. She recently, I felt God nudging me to just to begin to take more seriously spending time with Him, with God, and prioritizing her and the family. And so when I told her this, I sat down and I said, "This is what I heard from God." She said, "Great, I've been praying for you for that for years." You know. But in your true self, you know that God has everything under His power. The future, people's reactions, people's choices, even those people you might think are wrong. You see people beyond their sins. You allow other people the freedom to be who God made them to be. Now, I want to get into some of the experiences in our lives that can damage our true self. The reality is that, again, most of us, we're not living in either of these. We live in both worlds, so I want to even say that again. But think of the parable of the field. There's good grain that's sown, but the evil one comes in and he sows weeds into the field. And so the way I'm using this parable is that the shame that we talked about last time is like the weeds that get grown into our identity. Does that make sense? And we need to parse out that shame, parse out those weeds. But what happens to us is that so often our families and the people close to us, they water the weeds or even add more weeds. And sometimes we can't tell the difference between the weeds and the good grain anymore. See? I remember one time, my background is in trumpet, and I love the trumpet, but in early middle school and high school, I got really into it, you know? And so I was getting up at 4 in the morning and practicing before school, and I'd skip class to practice, failed gym because I was practicing, you know? And I remember one time, this is just an example of how my true self got wounded. I was at a high school music program out in Tanglewood for the summer, and I had a bit of an attitude back then. There was a time when I had a mohawk and things like that. But I had a trumpet lesson with a teacher who I think was trying to break me. And he had me do my lesson standing outside a parking lot in front of the whole parking lot when the orchestra bus was coming in with 120 of my peers, you know, some of the best musicians in the country coming, getting off this bus. And he had me play a piece that was too hard for me to play at a tempo that was too fast for me to play it. And he yelled at me to get it together while I did this in front of the whole group, you know. And then he walked off and told me not to come back until I'd practiced. You know? And so I was humiliated and totally, I mean, devastated, you know, at this. And I remember getting my trumpet case and throwing it into the woods. This is like an outdoor space. But then what happened was I picked myself up again and I said, never again. And I remember standing in a field, practicing that piece over and over and over, and it started to rain. And I kept going until I couldn't see the stand anymore. And some people would say, that's good, you know, because it got me motivated. That was his point, you know. But I wasn't motivated because of the call on my life. I was motivated because I wanted to get the approval of others in my music field. And I didn't want to be rejected. And it started a false self, you see, or played into one that I already had. And the result was that my identity, you know, started to revolve around seeking approval in other areas. And avoiding that kind of rejection so that I became a perfectionist in that area. And so if I'd make a mistake, I would be devastated. See? Now, many years later, I still felt a sense of failure in my life, but I didn't know where it was coming from. I didn't even remember some of those things, but this deep sense of failure. And Rain and I were praying together to find the roots of this feeling, and these trumpet memories started to come back up again. And in each memory, during the prayer time, I felt Yeshua go through them and say, this isn't what I've called you to do. And then he came in and healed those wounds. And so now those times, those memories, instead of being sources of deep-seated failure that play into every other aspect of my life, became something that strengthened my call, something that strengthened my purpose and value. Another example, sometimes these kind of examples are not like one thing that happened, you know, but it's like a chain of identity-shaping events that stem from earlier than we can even remember. I think that we're created to be dependent on our parents to nurture and identify and draw out our true self, draw out that part of us. And, you know, we have four small kids at home, you know, and I'm sure those of you who have kids here, you see this every day, that everything we do, the kids take and they process it very carefully. And then they apply it to themselves. And they're looking to their parents to show them who they are, what the world is about, why they're here. And they watch everything to make sure the messages are consistent. So, a fun example, there's a lot of these examples, but Rand and I were driving on a road trip, and we were tired. I think we were driving to the UMGC conference in Chicago. And we couldn't find a hotel. It was like 10:30 at night. We were tired. And so we thought Chaim was asleep. He was three at that time. And so we were like bickering at each other, you know, in the car, you know. And Chaim says from the back, he's like, "Mommy and Daddy, why are you talking mean to each other?" And yeah, so we had to apologize to him right away, you know. I mean, it was like, oh my goodness, you know, what did we just do? Oh, but it's great. See, the neat thing as parents is that if you mess up, you can apologize. And if you get into a fight or whatever, I want to suggest try to apologize in front of the kids. Because it actually ends up being better to them than if you never did something wrong. Because at some point in their lives, they're going to do something wrong and they're going to need to know that it's okay. And make a big deal of it. This is a little aside, but make a big deal of it. You know, we like to do foot washings whenever we need to apologize. And the kids like get all into it and they get giddy and excited about it. And so make a big deal about it. Hug in front of your kids. Kiss in front of your kids. You know, be all over each other. Be affectionate. You know, it makes the kids feel safe. And it makes them feel like they belong. You know, and it makes them feel important. They come right in the middle of it and get excited and giddy. But what happens to a child's identity when things don't go like that? What if when a different three-year-old child says to mom or dad, "Why are you being mean to mommy?" And daddy yells back in a terrifying voice, "Why don't you shut up and mind your own business, you little loser?" And then the child sees him hit mom and storm out of the room. And then mommy, while crying, tells him to go to his room. And he goes and he sits alone. Something in that child will die that evening. Because he'll think it's all his fault. Because he was a loser. See? These things happen all the time. And the bit of shame and loneliness, it comes into that child's true self. And what happens if it happens again and again? You know, until one day, a year later, he hears that dad's not going to live with him anymore. And mommy and daddy don't love each other anymore, and the boy has to move out of his room because mommy can't pay for the house, and now mommy works and cries all the time. You know, then dad's supposed to come and take him for his weekend, but he never shows up. And in a subtle and unconscious way, the little boy decides that he has no value. And the most important person in his life doesn't care. So he isn't going to care either. And so he shuts down. And his soul shuts down. And of course, there are so many things that happen in families, you know. And we can be so hurtful to each other. Abuse, neglect, trauma, abandonment. But even in religious homes, you know, it seems healthy on the outside. When high expectations are put on kids to perform for God or for other people, they end up feeling that they're only valued if they behave well or perform well. A little more subtle. God will love you if you do this, you know, which means he won't love you if you don't, right? Or you'll make mommy love you more if you clean your room. Parents, we say these sorts of things because we don't mean it, but, you know, but what happens is then they mess up and they believe that God thinks they're bad and couldn't possibly love them anymore. And these things just end up crushing our true self, you know. And even in relatively healthy homes, we have so many outside influences on us. People interpreting who we are, telling us what we should feel and what we should think. As far as I know, my daughter Aviva has never had a negative word spoken to her about her beauty. About one day when she was three, and I told her that she was beautiful, she got this little look of shame on her face. and retreated back. And so I asked her about it, and she said that she didn't think she was beautiful because she didn't look like Princess Anna and Elsa from Frozen. Yeah, this stuff comes in early, you know? So it was beautiful. The next time we went on a date, and it was in a canoe, and we were out there, and we were looking at this beautiful blue jay on the river. And she thought it was very beautiful. And so I said to her, if God made that blue jay beautiful, and you're more important and valued than the blue jay, then think of how much more beautiful he must have made you. So you're more beautiful than a blue jay. It became like a tagline, you know, for the family. You're more beautiful than the sunset. You know, you're the crown of creation. You know, and this is true. I mean, this is you. This is who God says you are. Think of the most beautiful thing that you've seen. You see, in creation, you're more beautiful and of more value. So, who in your life is speaking that truth to you about who you really are? And the healing here, moving into that, it isn't just like you choose to be different. I don't think that really can happen for most of us, because the roots are so intertwined with our identity. It's so deep. This is so deep. A speaker named Don Williams said, "The false self is built on a toxic waste dump. You can't redeem it. Instead, we need to strip it away and allow God to draw out our true self." See? Next month, when we get into the inner healing a little bit more, we're going to get into how to pray for these kinds of traumatic experiences that can shut us down. But the inner healing here, which is like a level even deeper than that, in my experience thus far, it's not a specific thing or event, but more of a re-nurturing that has to happen. It's like the deepest part of ourselves that was supposed to be nurtured, you know, and cultivated when we were from infancy all the way on. Maybe it wasn't. And so inside us, it's like that part of us is missing. Like who we are is missing. And in the prayer room, we meet people regularly who have been so hurt by their emotions, and they're just totally shut down. And sometimes you'll meet someone that haven't cried in years, even though there's a lot to cry about in their life. But what happens is the Holy Spirit comes through, and in my experience, he seems in such a gentle, safe way to come, and he comes in, and they'll begin to cry. And sometimes to begin to feel for the first time in years. There's a story that I want to share that I was given permission to share this story anonymously. Not someone here at Ruach, but we were praying for a woman, young woman who had been violently abused by her father as a small child repeatedly, again and again and again. And this was the first time that she told anyone about what had happened. It was in the prayer room. And this was kind of early on in our, you know, prayer journey, and so I'm like, I don't know what to do. But we went right into inner healing prayer and prayed about some of the specific moments. I won't share the stories. You don't want to hear them. But into some of the memories, inviting Yeshua to come and to bring healing into those memories. And so often, like almost all the time, but not all the time, but we see Yeshua come into a memory, and he brings healing, and he comes. But this time there was nothing. Just nothing. She couldn't feel God's love. She couldn't feel anything. And so I was praying, you know, with another, there was another woman there, we were praying together. And I remember praying, you know, softly, Abba, I need your help. I have no idea what to do, and this is just way over my head. And then I felt God speak to me, what would you do if this happened to your 3-year-old daughter? So I asked her if we could just hold her. And she started weeping. And we prayed in tongues over her, whispered words of comfort to her, it's not your fault, you know, you're safe. He isn't going to hurt you anymore. Yeshua was saying, I love you. You're so loved. You're cherished. You're beautiful. All the things that should have happened back then that didn't. But she wept. And she wept uncontrollably for over 3 hours. It's not everywhere. You know, 3 hours. I mean, this taught me an important lesson about healing. Not only how we can damage each other, you know, and the reverse is true, how we can cultivate and nurture each other. But it taught me an important lesson about healing. You know, when we started praying, I expected that Yeshua would start by healing the memories of the trauma. And we'll talk about that kind of healing next month. But the beginning of the healing wasn't focused on the abuse at all. It was focused underneath, in what she thought of herself and who she was. And that so often happens since then. We've just seen this again and again with severe abuse and neglect. Our parents are supposed to nurture this light inside of us to teach us who we are, but they snuff it out. We never grow up on the inside. And even though a person may be high-functioning on the outside, sometimes when they really get to it, they'll describe a sea of darkness on the inside, like an awful empty space that seems to have a glass wall of fear around it. And they might be just terrified to go there. And I've come to see that this darkness is not so much a thing, it's a lack. It's that place that's supposed to be filled with light from birth, filled with love, filled with belonging, with purpose, with meaning, with life, with spontaneity. It's snuffed out, never nurtured, densely covered in a veil of fear and self-hatred. But Yeshua is so gentle. During that prayer time, and several others following, he came like a small glowing candle, if you can visualize this. Like a little flame in a world of fear and darkness, and ever so gently began to nurture life. And she wrote this for me to share. She wrote, "I grew up in constant fear and uncertainty. I learned to withdraw into myself and hide because it wasn't safe to be seen or heard. The angry and violent explosions could happen at any time, for any reason. So it was best if you made yourself unnoticed and as invisible as possible. So I've been hiding all my life. During prayer, I opened up a part of myself that was vulnerable in ways that I had never thought I would be able to because of the shame that I felt. I've experienced a small but real taste of what it's like to be free from the shame and fear that I felt were trying to choke the life out of me, to be seen, to be known, and to be loved. There's so much freedom waiting for me in God's perfect love. He's calling me to come out of hiding, to let go of fear, and to be seen, and to be heard." And I think that Yeshua came in and saw her, just like he did with the adulterous women and all those stories that we read about. He saw the real her. And ever so gently, he began to whisper to her who she was. She was worthy. So, you know, some of you sitting here may have been through abuse like that. Some of you, maybe you haven't. And that's a good thing, you know. Some of you, maybe the hurts are less dramatic and more subtle, if they're there at all. But either way, the healing here is the same. It's a long-term healing where you have to allow God to begin to re-nurture that crippled or hurting part of your identity. And this is a healing that's like the deepest part of our soul, who we are, who we were created to be. And the real healing here is in Yeshua's arms. Spending time with him, learning to hear his voice above all the other voices. And be lighthearted about it. Healing is about freedom. Sometimes we get into inner healing and it's like this deep, deep, deep. But be lighthearted about it. It's about getting rid of the stuff that's weighing us down. You know? Have you ever met, I'll close this, have you ever met children who have never been shut down before? Who have not heard and internalized those voices of shame and rejection? You know, there's so much joy. It is filled with joy that they're full of life. They're full of spontaneity. Everything is exciting. Their eyes light up with freedom. You know what? Like our 2-year-old, when I come home after work, she sees me coming, and she gets so excited she starts shaking. I mean, she's like, "Daddy!" You know, and there's so much life, and it's so much joy and freedom, and that's who we are supposed to be. And Yeshua said that when we become like a child, we'll enter the kingdom of God. And maybe one of the things he meant was that when we can finally drop all that baggage and learn who we really are, from God, in God, purposed by God, returning to God, everything under his power, so deeply loved. So let this be about joy.